Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 7, Episode 37. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com and sitting in once again for David Todd, as he's been doing all this week. David Todd, of course, in New York this past week. I think he's scheduled to fly back today being Friday. Sitting in for him, Alex Cazora. Alex, happy Friday. Happy Ravens weekend.
Happy Ravens weekend, and it's gonna be a great weekend. So enjoy it. Hopefully, come out with a victory though. That'll be a whole lot easier to enjoy.
Yeah, it seems like with the bye week and it seems like the Steelers haven't played in over a month. I know you and I have been looking at some Ravens film this past week, and we'll be of course previewing that game a little bit closer here later on in this show. And you know, we'll start pretty much as we always do on these, and especially with it being Friday, the injury report and the big question, you know, revolves around quarterback Ben Roethlisberger, whether or not he's going to play against the Ravens. Roethlisberger was limited again on Thursday. Ed Bouchette posted and talked about Roethlisberger on 93.7 The Fan, and really pretty much said, sources told him that. You know, barring any kind of setback, that Roethlisberger will indeed, you know, start and play against the Ravens. So, you know, you kind of throw everything into the blender here. I know I said on the Wednesday show that, you know, kind of judging by what some players had said, I didn't think he was going to play. But, you know, I left that with, you know, hey, this is Ben Roethlisberger. If he can make it out there, he's going to play. You know, we obviously don't know what he's dealing with pain-wise and where he's at mobility-wise. We get a few videos from the papers up on Twitter, you know, showing him taking a snap or two right here, you know, here and there. Mm-hmm. You know, are you worried about him any?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I am pretty convinced that he is going to play. I mean, every indication is that he is, and, you know, just knowing, you know, who he is and how he's played before through injury and can come back, you know, either on schedule or earlier than anticipated. You know, I'm pretty confident that he is going to play. I'd be pretty surprised if he didn't. It's just a question of effectiveness right now. And I go back to the great work that you've done, Dave, and have looked at studies about, you know, Ben at Baltimore lately, the last four trips, and Ben historically, his first game back from injury, and just in general, Ben's road performances, you know, the last season or two, I think it is. You know, David Todd has talked about that a lot. So knowing also just how legitimately tough that Ravens defense is, and we'll get into that as we talk about them a little bit throughout the show, yeah, I am concerned about them because it's going to be difficult to run on this Ravens defense, even with Le'Veon Bell. So, you know, Ben's going to have to, you know, have a lot in his hands. And again, given the history, you know, it's not that I'm not optimistic. It's just that, yeah, there's a legitimate and historical concern there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you hit on it. I mean, he's never really played great in Baltimore throughout his entire career. And what do we have? Seven games with him coming back off of injury. And that hasn't been good either. And yeah, you throw in the fact that he's not 100%, and I mean there is a legitimate reason to be concerned. Now, of course, history is history. Every NFL game you can usually circle 3, 4, 5 plays, and you know, predominantly a lot of the NFL games are close anyway, talking about a touchdown or less. So, you know, anything can indeed happen, but there is a legitimate concern. And you know, obviously Roethlisberger probably still gives you, you know, an 80% Roethlisberger gives you a better chance to win than 100% Landry Jones.
Yeah, no disagreement there at all. But Dave, I mean, I'm doing this just off the hip right now, looking it up on Pro Football Reference, but I'm trying to look at the success Ben's ever had in Baltimore. He had one good game in 2013. I think it looks like they ended up losing that game. But really, other than that, I'm going back since like 2011, 2010. I mean, he has not really ever had a marquee game. You know, they've been average at best and, you know, statistically kind of bad at worst at Baltimore. So, again, the precedent is not really there.
Yeah, you start back in 2004 there, and well, actually 2005 would be coming off of injury, but 2004 was his first time playing in week two there against the Ravens. He completed 60% of his passes that day, but only 176 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions, two sacks in that game, and that quarterback rating of 82.5 in that game. It stands as the second highest ever in games that he started and played in Baltimore. Now, you can go back to 2013 in I believe it was week 12 or week 13 game in a loss to Baltimore. 63.6% of his passes were completed, but only a 5.8 yards per attempt in that game. He had two touchdowns, zero interceptions, zero sacks. So even his best game, you know, against the Ravens, ended up in a 22-20 loss, and he only threw for 257 yards. I don't know about you. I would take 63.6% passing, 257 yards, two touchdowns, zero interceptions, zero sacks. I'll take my chances with those kind of numbers Sunday in Baltimore, right?
All day, yeah. I'll just quickly run through kind of since 2011, his other performances. 2011, week one, this is one of the tougher games he's had. The 35-7 loss, 22 of 41, 53% completion rate, 280 yards, one touchdown, three picks. Next year, he didn't play against them on the road. Then he had his good game in 2013. 2014, 26-6 loss, 22 of 37, no touchdowns, one pick, only 217 yards. He passed for last year 24-34, 220 yards, no touchdowns, two picks. So that's just a, you know, kind of a little window into the struggles he's had against Baltimore. It's always tough to play there. They're always a tough team. Their run defense is always very good. They do make teams one-dimensional. And, you know, again, that we just kind of all goes into the pile of some of the concerning factors with Ben given the situation. To answer that original question, yeah, how can you not be concerned?
And, you know, I would think you want him to get that ball out quick this week, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always for a quarterback getting the ball out quick, but I'm sure the Ravens know that too. And the Ravens, they run a lot of variety defensively in terms of their scheme. You can check it out in the scouting report that went up a little bit ago on Steelers Depot. You know, they're going to mix up their looks a lot. They're going to do a lot of stuff at the line of scrimmage. They're going to run some amoeba fronts, some one defensive lineman stuff that's going to be able to put a lot of movable pieces for them, and they're going to blitz a little bit as well. So you want the ball to come out quick, but you have to be able to read the defense and know what's coming to get the ball out quick, and Baltimore presents a challenge in that way.
As far as the rest of the injury report goes, we're working off of Thursday's injury report still. I don't think the Friday one will be out before we end this podcast. But Cody Wallace, he's not playing this week with that knee. He's yet to play all season. We mentioned in the last podcast that you know, there's a lot of speculation now that he's not going to play for the rest of the season, probably going to be a candidate to go on IR here in the next week or so. Might be the guy that ends up going to IR when and if Ladarius Green gets promoted back to the 53-man roster from reserve PUP list. D'Angelo Williams, a step backwards on Thursday, and that's a bit concerning with that knee. He failed to practice after being limited on Wednesday. Now, Mike Tomlin really kind of set us up for that, saying that he has had some problems with that knee, you know, over the last couple of weeks here. So I fully expect D'Angelo Williams to be out. I'm not expecting them to make a practice squad move. They didn't, you know, they didn't do that ahead of the New England Patriots game. So, you know, we'll have to watch and see if anything happens Saturday with him. As far as the rest of the injury report goes, Antonio Brown with the hip, tackle Marcus Gilbert with the ankle, defensive end Cameron Hayward with the hamstring, safety Shamarco Thomas with the groin, wide receiver Marcus Wheaton with a shoulder, and David DeCastro not injury related, even though it turns out it was maybe a minor illness. All practice fully on Thursday. All are expected to play against the Ravens on Sunday. So right now I would say we have two players probably going to get ruled out on Friday. in Cody Wallace and D'Angelo Williams. We'll probably see Ben Roethlisberger listed as questionable, and that'll probably be it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a higher chance that they make a move for the practice squad this week because they're healthier all around. I mean, you have all your receivers back, so in theory, you know, one of them is an odd man out, you know, a guy like maybe Kobe Hamilton or something like that. So, you know, with getting Marcus Gilbert back and Brian Mahalik go back to the practice squad, I think they actually have to hold on to him for maybe another week because they pulled him off the Lions practice squad. But the point being, you know, as they get healthier, they might be able to have more flexibility in making a roster move because they want to and bring up a guy like either Daryl Richardson or Carlos Williams. So it wouldn't shock me if they did it this week because they have getting the Calvary back.
Let's play the inactive game.
It's your favorite one. Last week was easy. 2 weeks ago was easy.
This week, not so easy, right?
No.
Mahalik will be, assuming he's on the roster Saturday night, Mahalik will be down. Cody
Wallace and D. Williams.
Wallace and D'Angelo Williams will be down. You know, if Kobe Hamilton's still on this roster, you know, there's a good chance he's going to be down, right?
It'd be a little interesting. I mean, I assume that Wheaton's going to get the helmet over him, but I know Hamilton had played well, but I'll assume Hamilton.
LT Walton go back to being down?
Yeah, I think he will with Hayward back.
Okay, that's five. Mettenberger down?
Yep, assuming Ben's good to go.
All right, that's six. Who's number seven here?
Oh, I don't know. Steven Johnson, maybe. Maybe a safety. That's a good question. I'm not really sure who the last one. Steven Johnson maybe would be your best bet.
Yeah, I would maybe point to him as well. I'm trying to run. You know, I don't think you want a guy like Jordan Dangerfield. Down. Do you maybe give Shamarco another week? Put him.
Yeah, I did think about that, but man, if they were trotting out Sammy Coates as the left gunner last week or against the Patriots game, I want Shark out there instead. So Dangerfield and Shark do play some different positions on special teams. So I think having them both is nice, especially against Devin Hester. I know he's not what he used to be, but I want all hands on deck to try to stop him.
The thing is with Steven Johnson, this is a guy that after the season's over, we're going to be talking about. Boy, what a polarizing player this guy ended up being for a guy that played zero, you know, barely any snaps. This guy was signed to contribute on special teams, you know, plain and simple. And he's done that. He leads the team in special teams tackles. So, you know, people you know, were hollering for him to be gone right from the start. Now, of course, he did do that do-si-do right there prior to week one as they had to shuffle the roster real quick because of trying to get, who was it, Golson or who was it, Bud Dupree to IR there. So, you know, regardless, Fitzgerald Toussaint's going to dress this week, so it'll be interesting to see how that seventh inactive plays out. I feel pretty good that we probably got six of them right now, and obviously if Roethlisberger does not, you know, is ruled out, then Mettenberger will dress and Roethlisberger won't. But as we stand here right now, we think Ben, you know, I think we both are in agreement. Ben's going to start and play. Steeler fans, the mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging to figuring out whether or not Ben Roethlisberger is going to play following an injury. Let Craig Oxane guide you through the sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams. Even if you live in Cleveland, or this week, even if you live in Baltimore, if you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Oxane, a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or you can email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. And with that, we'll shift gears into kind of some other news that took place on Thursday. The news from, I think, Ray Fittipaldi from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette had it out there first that Artie Burns is going to make his first career start Sunday in Baltimore over William Gay. But the you know, with how much the Steelers play, you know, nickel or and dime defense, you know, on paper this looks like a big move, but in essence, it really isn't, right?
Right, yeah. In context, you know, it might not mean a lot, but, you know, it was just maybe a little confusing because the way I interpret it, and I think the way most of us interpret it, is that in the Steelers' base defense, it's going to be Artie Burns at right cornerback. But some people are, you know, saying that if you read the, more into the report, that it just means that they're going to play a lot more nickel this week and Burns is going to have a more prominent role, if there can be such a thing when you're already running nickel 65-70% of the time. So I guess, you know, I'll wait till Sunday to see what happens, but even though I know that base is only going to be used, you know, a minority amount of the time, the Ravens use a fullback a lot. They have used check. They run a lot of two tight end sets. So you're going to probably run more base against Baltimore than you will against most teams. So I think it's, you know, if that's the case and Burns is playing as the base corner, I think it's very strange. And I wholly disagree with it, to be honest with you, Dave. You know, Burns' struggles against the run have been well documented. Tomlin's even talked about it. And to throw him out there as the base corner where your run support's going to be the most prevalent just seems counterintuitive. You know, I was talking about maybe benching Burns to get, you know, someone else out there because of the poor run support. So the idea to put him in base just seems very, and as I wrote about in the article, very puzzling.
Yeah, he struggles on that kind of that crack and replace and, you know.
And just general containment problem, yeah.
Yeah, and this these are things that you go back and, I spent a lot of time looking at his college film prior to the draft and, Not a physical guy right now, you know, yet. And that stems all the way back to his time at Miami. And this kind of fits in with a question we put out on Twitter asking for questions on this Friday. And Mike Mitchell, a long time, not Mike Mitchell that plays for the Steelers, but Mike Mitchell, Steelers fan, who I believe Mike lives in Jacksonville, if I'm not mistaken. He asked, could you break down the specific differences in Burns and Gay as cornerbacks? And the striking differences right off the top is the physicality of the two. I mean, Gay is a guy that not only plays the run, he can come up and play that screen pass very effectively. And that's just starters. And when you talk about X's and O's and smarts and everything that goes along with that, Gay is a very, very underrated smart cornerback.
He is, and I will say I'm probably a little disappointed in Gay's performance this year. It's not been bad, but, you know, I thought he would have the impact plays that we've seen the last, you know, two seasons where he's been an interception machine, a pick six machine, surprisingly. Was he at five of them in his career? I think four in the last two seasons. So he's had his chances. You know, Tomlin pointed to the Miami play in Tuesday's presser. But overall, as a tackler and run support defender, I mean, Gay's the best guy on this team, you know, at cornerback, no doubt about it. So, again, it's a little strange that if Burns is going to become the base corner to shuttle Gay to the back. It's, again, very puzzling.
So we expect to see Gay in the slot, and, you know, maybe up on Pitta or whoever else they put in the slot, right?
Yeah, not really. You know, I think they use a little bit of Kamar Aiken. Pitta definitely detaches from the formation a lot, so you can see some of that. It'll be interesting to see exactly how Pittsburgh defends him because Dennis Pitta is their most involved guy in the offense. 38 catches, that leads the team. 13 receptions on third down. That's four more than anybody else on this Ravens team right now. That's one of the, you know, near the top of the league for third down receptions. Pitta's 13, so you know, that's the guy that you're going to want to circle and say we got to shut this guy down on third down. That's the guy that Joe Flacco looks for.
And kind of wrapping things up injury-wise, looking at the Ravens side of the football, the names that stick out the most that did not participate in Thursday's session, Elvis Dumervil with that foot, that's 2 days in a row that he's not practicing, so, you know, not looking good for him to play. Crockett Gilmore with a thigh. Sharice Wright, you know, one of their corners, that, you know, that could end up being, you know, decently significant, if you ask me. He had been, I believe, limited in the Thursday session and then, of course, did not participate on Thursday. So that's never a good sign when you have someone going backwards on the injury report. Limited also on Thursday for the Ravens linebacker C.J. Mosley. You know, he's been limited 2 days in a row. We'll see what Friday says. I'm guessing C.J.'s going to be listed as questionable and will play. The only really other significant one, I think, Steve Smith Sr. with the ankle. He did not practice on Wednesday, but he was limited on Thursday. You know, we'll see what Friday brings for him. You would think if he does suit up and play against the Steelers, and God knows you know he wants to, he's not going to be 100%. Even though they could probably use a guy like him back in the lineup, I don't think he's going to be 100%. So we'll see what Friday brings for those guys. The Ravens, I think the biggest news with them is the guys that they are going to get back this week, and that's rookie left tackle Ronnie Stanley, who's missed, I think, the last four games with a foot injury. Terrell Suggs missed the pre-bye week game against, the Jets with a bicep injury. He's not going to be 100%, but – you know, is 75% of Terrell Suggs worth having out there? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
11 and a half career sacks of Ben Roethlisberger is what Suggs has. Ladarius Webb with a thigh, he should be good to go. Marshall Yanda, probably one of the top two or three guards in the league, if not the best guard in the league, will be back in the lineup. I think he's missed the last two games with a shoulder injury. And then Tavon Young was a full participant after suffering a concussion. So they're getting healthy just like the Steelers are. So I think the big names to watch there will be C.J. Mosley, Steve Smith, and you know, which Sharice Wright, you know, possibly not playing, that could be pretty big, right?
Well, Wright's been phased out of that defense. He struggled some with injury and poor play. I like Sharice Wright, so I was someone that wanted to sign him in the offseason, and that's not looking like a good idea right now. So he hasn't been involved a lot. They have Tavon Young as their left corner, Jimmy Smith as their right corner, Gerard Powers in the slot. So they have their group of guys that are playing relatively well right now. Let me scare you for a second, Dave, and I'm going to scare you and Steelers Nation and myself as well. And you know, when I'm reading this Ravens injury report, I keep thinking about the Dolphins week. You know, it was a mediocre run offense coming into those games, but they got a lot healthier on the offensive line. Remember, the Dolphins got back their left tackle, their left guard, Brandon Albert and Laremy Tunsil. Now the Ravens get back their left tackle and Ronnie Stanley and their right guard and Marshall Yanda. So, you know, there's some very obvious similarities between those two, and Yanda's a great guard, one of the best in the game. So, you know, that has me worried for this week. Of course, Pittsburgh gets Cam Hayward back, but, you know, you're seeing a pretty mediocre Ravens rushing attack get a lot healthier on the offensive line. And that's going to bode really well for them.
Yeah, and to wrap things up for the Steelers as well, too, guys that are not on the injury report for one reason or the other, a lot of them because they don't have to be because of their designation. Ladarius Green, it doesn't sound like he's going to be activated back this week. In fact, you know, I think you can sort of start questioning whether or not he'll be ready for the Dallas Cowboys game. The Steelers have a 21-day window with him. Some of the things that Ladarius Green said on Thursday in the locker room, you know, he's still hesitant to do some things, and that's probably not overly surprising. I know fans listening to this are saying, "My God, when is this guy going to get on the field?" But let's remember that this guy has not, you know, did not participate in any of the off-season practices, did not participate in training camp, essentially got back to work last week during the bye week. Still probably some football conditioning stuff there. Probably that ankle is a little bit tender even still. I know people don't like to hear that. So, you know, I think I'll be surprised still if he's activated on Saturday for this Ravens game. And I think right now you automatically have to start wondering, will he be ready for the game against the Cowboys? Sammy Coates is another one that was not listed on the injury report this week. That's obviously a great sign, him and that fractured or broken left index finger. Ed Bouchette was on 93.7 yesterday, as I mentioned at top of the show, and he said Sammy Coates looks tremendous and during practice. And the easy response to that would be, we talking about practice. You know, but look, if there's any guy that the Steelers really need back, you know, this week, not named Roethlisberger, back to full strength, of course, they've had Sammy Coates. It's just he's really, really been limited with that finger. They could use a couple of two or three 20-plus yard catches from Sammy Coates in this game against a Ravens defense that hasn't been bad against the deep pass.
Yeah, we talked about it, I think, on Wednesday, Dave, that to get Coates back would be absolutely huge. So if that hand's in good shape, which hopefully it is, then he'll be good to go. Again, just take him off special teams, Tomlin. It's just not needed this week.
Especially if you get some of these bodies back, like Shamarco, most definitely. Keep Sammy Coates off special teams. Of course, Darius Heyward-Bey, even though he's promoted to the ahead of Marcus Wheaton on the depth chart, we expect him to still get a large portion of special team snaps this week, especially on kickoff return, I would think. Danny Smith really gushed over him during his Coach's Corner segment, didn't he?
Yeah, no, I love hearing Danny Smith talk. And again, I know that I talk about Danny Smith a lot. Maybe it annoys some people. I truly think he's a good coach. It's not just because he's a special teams guy that chews on the gum or whatever he has and yells at the players and stuff. But he truly cares about his guys. You know, he said that, you know, he loves DHB, would do anything for him. So, you know, he's a guy that puts in as much work for his players as the players put in for him. And I think you have a great relationship between the players and coach. And I think that's why, you know, special teams is all about buying into a system. And no one embodies that better than Darius Heyward-Bey, a guy that was a first-round pick, was supposed to be a face of a franchise, a star of the team, and, you know, it didn't pan out. And he, you know, bought into special teams and carved out a niche there and has done some nice things there as a receiver. So, you know, I think that just, you know, shows the kind of guy that DHB is, the work ethic, the character. And, you know, I think Danny Smith has helped that in a lot of ways. So, yeah, he's been such a valuable piece to this team.
Another big narrative. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but, I mean, we've had a few players or former coaches and former players and current players talk about this week concerning Roethlisberger. The whole drama king diva discussion is back again, hard and heavy this week. Brian Billick, you know, called basically in so many words, said Roethlisberger is the toughest diva that he's ever seen. Terrell Suggs came out and kind of defended Roethlisberger and said, "Look, you know, this guy, he expects to see his big ass out there on Sunday, and how can you be a diva when you have two Super Bowl rings already?" I think Cordell Stewart has chimed in on this. Bart Scott chimed in it after Roethlisberger got injured in that game against the Dolphins. You know, all of this, I think you can continue to, and this type of narrative will always follow Ben Roethlisberger the rest of his career. After Ben's career is over, there'll still be a small section of analysts or whoever that say, "Boy, Ben sure was a kind of a drama king." And you know, if you go back several years ago to the things that he had said about his broken toes and his foot or whatnot, I can understand where people get this talk. But it comes down to this. I'm not going to deny that Ben may embellish injuries at times. I mean, who of us haven't? I mean, I still got, have I mentioned I got this big bruise still on my stomach from falling down.
Do you?
From falling down the stairs the other day. And boy, Alex, I'm not sure. I don't know if I'm going to be able to blog at 100% this week. Look.
Highly questionable.
Yeah, a lower body injury. men do that kind of things, and I'm not going to hold it against them. The thing is, you know, you want to point to one play in particular during his career, is the whole broken nose thing during the Ravens game many, many moons ago. How many guys do you see blood just pouring out of their nose?
Yeah,
you know, just come back and play like nothing, you know, ever happened. You can go back, even though he didn't play well in that game against San Francisco many Sunday or Monday nights ago with the ankle and all. If he's healthy enough to even limp his fat ass out there, he's going to play.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, I mean, you can call him a diva, you can call him a drama queen, as long as he wins Super Bowls and games and gives his team a chance, I don't care. You can call it whatever you want, as long as he does that, because there's not a lot of quarterbacks in the league that you can say that about. So, maybe Ben plays it up a little bit sometimes. I don't know. I don't really think about it a whole lot. I just think if he's going to be available and how he's playing, rather than, you know, any of the other fluff of the situation. But yeah, the games like that, San Francisco game, even if it wasn't a good performance, the Ravens game, my favorite play, I think it was the same game that he broke his nose, maybe you can correct me on this, is the one where it was late in the game. It was right before Ben threw the game winning touchdown to Isaac Redmond after the Troy fumble, and it was Suggs trying to take him down, and Ben's just holding on to the football because Suggs is trying to actively rip the football out, and Ben's just backpedaling to the sideline and is able to flip and flip the ball to the sideline and throw it out of bounds. You remember that play,
yes,
Dave?
I don't know if you remember
that one or not. Yeah. Was that the same game that he had the broken nose, or was that a different game? It was the game where they made the comeback where Troy had the forced fumble on Flacco late. Woodley recovered it. They threw the touchdown pass to Redmond to win it. Is that the same game?
I remember the tomahawk chop by Paul Amalo, and I definitely remember the quick pass to Redmond, who had lined up outside, I believe, on that play. What was that, third or fourth down? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was third.
I can't remember if that was the same play or not. But I know the play that you're referencing there. I just can't remember if that was in that same game or not. Yeah, Ben, when and if Ben gets into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, he should definitely have some fun with the whole drama king diva type thing when he goes up there, you know, to give his speech and everything related to that. Look, he's a tough quarterback, and you know, more than anything, we'll see how this game Sunday plays out. You know, if he ultimately plays, the biggest narrative, you know, might end up being does Ben come back too soon from injury, you know, or why does Ben play so bad coming back from injury?
Yeah, you know, it's clear that in most of these games, and Sunday included, assuming he starts, he won't be at 100%. I'm curious of the teams that he's faced whenever he's come back. I mean, you know, Baltimore's happened a little bit. You know, how good were those defenses? I wonder if there's any sort of correlation there. So, yeah, I don't have a great answer other than that, you know, he's obviously not coming back at 100%. You know, he tries to get back as soon as he can.
Yeah, and I think one of our writers, Daniel, has a post coming up for later on today, on today being Friday still, about how the Steelers' defense has played in Roethlisberger's first game back. So I think there'll be some interesting numbers included in that as well too. So all right, let's move forward and talk more about Steelers Ravens right now. You did your weekly post along with some help here. Both those are up on this Friday here. What have you seen out of the Ravens offense?
I know they changed offensive coordinators, but I think they're generally the same group. With a run game, like I said, you know, the stats might not look super pretty, but they have Terrence West as their bell cow now. He's leading, you know, he's got a 4.4 yards per carry average. They're still generally a zone team, but they throw in some power. They do a couple different things. So, you know, they have, that offensive line's getting healthier this week, so that's big for them. I think their run game will have more success than what it's generally had before. You know, so you got to defend that outside zone, defending inside zone, a little bit of the power game as well as a passing game. You know, they're still a vertical attack. They want to take some pass interference type plays, which is very common to them, and they have a lot of speed at receiver with Breshad Perriman, with Mike Wallace. If Steve Smith should play, he can be a vertical threat, even if he doesn't have the speed he used to. Chris Moore, the rookie we talked about Wednesday, can be a vertical threat, but you know, they love to run play action. They love to try to cash in after sudden change opportunities, after turnovers. They love to go play action. They love to go deep.
Yeah, you had an interesting stat on that, right? I mean, you went back and looked at after every big play. I mean, how many times did they run play action, go deep after that?
They ran play action four of the seven applicable situations, and they ran a vertical concept on five of the seven. So, yeah, they want to try. And I know it's kind of cliche to talk about the big play after a turnover, but it doesn't happen as often as people think. But for Baltimore, they embody it. They live it. They want to try to, you know, stack the good plays, the turnover, the fumble, the interception. All right, let's take a shot deep and try to get, you know, the huge momentum-changing play to really kind of put you down. So, yeah, they'll definitely go vertical. It's something
and
to watch.
And we see Ben do that as well, too. Especially between the 40s, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, again, you know, some teams will do it. I think the Baltimore Ravens do it more than maybe any other team in the NFL.
And I think I had a stat the other day. I researched as far as deep pass interference plays so far this season. I think they have three. Was it three or four? I can't remember. But they, you know, they still will take their shots deep, and they're kind of throw the mud up on the wall and see what sticks, because Flacco has not been great with his deep passes this year. I mean, under 30% of the, I forget, 25 or 28 quarterbacks that have, I forget what the cutoff was. I think 30 or more deep pass attempts so far this season. it's Flacco and Brock Osweiler down there tied for the worst in the league at completion percentage. But the thing is they still chuck it just the same.
Real quick. Yeah, the passing offense isn't great numbers wise, but they still get their big chunk plays, and so they always have to be worried about it. They do a lot with Dennis Pitta, again moving him around the formation. So it's not a great passing offense, but you know, you throw a lot of that stuff out the window when it's Steelers Ravens.
I think my biggest concern is that they're an inside outside zone team, and mm-hmm. we have seen them gash the Steelers in the past with that outside zone. Marshall Yonda is one of the best at reading. At reading that and getting out to the second level, and not only that, getting a helmet on a guy that he needs, or cutting a guy that he needs to cut. So those mm-hmm. things can bust open like a ripe watermelon and go for 20, 25 yards.
Yeah, no, he's a great athlete. It's not even about, for me, just the second level stuff that we can do that. It's the reach blocks at the first level. If they're trying to run outside zone to his side, Marshall Yanta has a three tech on his outside shoulder, he's got to try to help maybe reach and seal that guy to the inside. That's a really key block. If you can get that block, you probably are going to have a good play. If you can't get that block, it's probably going to get penetration. The play is going to flow laterally. It's going to get blown up. So Yanta's great at it. And like I said, yeah, that offensive line's getting healthier this week. It's very reminiscent of the Dolphins game. Again, the Steelers are going to have health on their side as well, which is different than the Dolphins game, but from the opponent's standpoint, very, very similar. No one talked about Jay Ajayi until the Steelers game. Terrence West, kind of cut from a similar cloth, a bigger guy, does a nice job to fall forward, get his yak, could be having a, hopefully not, but could be having a similar story.
When you look at them rushing offensively, directionally, where they've had their most success so far this season has been right off of left guard. So Steelers will have, we think they're going to have Cameron Hayward back. We talked in the show on Wednesday about Golden and Shazier and Hayward and how important it probably is for all three of those guys to be on the field this year. When you look at them at running off left guard, 29 play, not a large sample size, but it's where they've run second most so far this season. Off left guard, they have averaged 6.24 yards per gain when running that direction there. When you look at them on the right, right of up the middle, talking about right guard, right tackle, right end, not as successful, believe it or not. 2.43 yards per carry off right guard, 2.27 yards per carry off right tackle. They get a little help on tackles off right end, 4.8 yards on 15 plays. So that, of course, has saved, made their average a little bit more respectable. But now keep in mind that Marshall Yonda has missed some time, and he's going to be on the right side, right?
Yeah, right side.
That's something to watch there. Having Shazier on this on the field Sunday, I think will help a lot. Hopefully.
Do you still expect the rotation with him and Vince Williams like Patriots game?
No disrespect to I think there will be some. Mm-hmm. I think more than anything, you probably see that on early, on obvious base downs. But even then, no disrespect to Vince Williams. That's what you have Ryan Shazier out there for, right? To be able to crack through some of those seams and or gaps and make a play in the backfield.
Well, it sounded like that Shazier was healthy and could have played every snap for that New England game, and they chose not to. So I'm not sure what's going to change this week. So I don't know. There could still be a rotation.
Yeah, what a disappointment. I mean, you got a first round draft pick. I mean, that guy should be on the field for 110% of the plays,
I was just going to bring it up. I mean, how many games, and I don't mean to turn this into a bash Shazier's, podcast, because I love the kid. I mean, he can be a great player, but how many games has he ever played where he's played, basically every snapper not been involved in a rotation? Because even when he came back last year, he was still in a pretty heavy rotation the rest of the way, I think, with Vince Williams, with Sean Spence, because he had missed so many reps and he just wasn't able to carry the full load. So and he did it two games this year, then he got hurt, and now he's back in a rotation. So I feel like it's only maybe been, I don't know, five games in his career where he's been 100% kind of snap type of guy.
That's a great question. I mean, we know that he's missed over a third, of his games due to injury. So the good thing is it wouldn't take long to research it, right?
Yeah, you could do it before this podcast is over, probably.
Talking Dave. About the games that he's played in, that's a backhanded comp. I mean, that's a
that's a Brian Billick type comp.
Yeah,
right there.
Yeah, most definitely. But yeah, you're right. I mean, look, and that's why I think there's still some question as to whether or not you got to pick up his fifth-year option. You know, he's...
Well, I would pick up the option just because if he breaks out, that's going to be worth it. Now, do you give him a contract after the fact? I think he played by ear, but yeah, I think it's a valid point.
Well,
when you
pick up that fifth year option, that the agent's going to expect that average yearly money to equal that fifth year option. So yeah, okay, yeah, they could pick up the fifth year option, let him play it out, and then decide if they want to put the franchise tag on him. You know.
Right. I mean, if he's healthy, he's worth that money. It's just a matter of whether you decide it's worth the risk or not. So, you know, it does set the market, but, you know, your decision's kind of the same because either you say he's just too damaged goods and you let him go, or you say, yeah, it's worth it and you pony up the money. So I think he put the option on him, but do you go long term? I mean, that's a wait and see situation
for me. Who's the biggest key for the Steelers this weekend on defense? Is it Ryan Shazier?
No, I think it's going to be – I don't know, man. I think it's going to be Cam Hayward again. I know that's really obvious to go to, but just you got to shore up this run defense. I mean, you can't let Baltimore run the football. Their passing offense has struggled as much as it has. You got to get teams behind the sticks. If you can stymie this rushing attack with the Ravens getting healthier again, you're going to be in a much better place, and I think it's going to have a lot to do with Cam Hayward.
And we don't expect him to play 100% of snaps this week. I mean, 75, I think everybody should be doing backflips, right, if you play 75% this week.
Yeah, well, anyway, his norm is usually around the 85, maybe touching 90 range, so I think he'll probably play about 80%. He's Cam Hayward. He's had the bye week. He's superhuman out there. You know, adrenaline starts going, Steelers, Ravens. I think he'll have close to his full complement of snaps.
The thing is, too, and I've started some research on this, we are allowed to do such things, I think, statistically, but you and I chatted about this the other night on Twitter, and look, it's easy to bash this team right now for the lack of blitzing, whether you want to call blitzing five or more guys, or if you want to call blitzing only four guys, but just with one of the guys, you know, being an inside linebacker or a defensive back, someone that you wouldn't expect to come. When you look at five-man blitz or five-man pressures on passing downs on third down or 5 yards or more to go, what did I tell you that number was?
Seven? What was it, like seven times? Yeah, it was like 12% of the time this year.
Yeah, seven times this year. And did I say that? I think that included penalty plays or no penalty plays.
It did include. Did include.
And I think there
plays.
Was one of those maybe. But seven times this year, the Steelers have sent five or more on third down with 5 or more yards to go.
Do you have last year's number by any chance? Did you look that up?
No, I haven't. You'll. Yeah. I'll probably make you fish that. being as how you'll probably all have right. that chart closer to you than yeah. I will. But you know, and I think too, maybe something that I'm going to probably look at as well too is how many times, you know, what do you consider long on second down? Seven or more?
Well, you have one of the successful stats, so yeah, isn't it like, you know, if you only gain
right? If you gain 4 yards on first and ten, if you gain 4 yards, then that's an unsuccessful mm-hmm. play. So, in other words, it would be second and six or more would be the ideal scenario to have the opposing offense in.
Okay,
and I guess we would have to look. We are doing math and future post planning live on the podcast here. I guess you'd have to look league-wide at how many times teams pass on second and six or more, right?
Right.
And
right.
you would expect that number to be high, obviously, you know, if you rule mm-hmm. out, you know, blowout situations and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is how many times have the Steelers faced a second, their defense faced a second and six or more, and how many times did they send five or more?
Yeah, well, again, the percentage is still low for that third and five plus. It's 12.5%. So let me just reiterate, because I have the chart up right now, because now you're making me want to find out what this number is from
And
last year.
what I did was just kill time, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was yeah.
I'm good at that.
You're great at it. The best gold medal. So third and five plus, right? We're looking for a number of five man rushes. Is it five plus?
Yeah, five
Is that
plus on third and five or more.
third and five or more? Okay, I think I have the numbers. There were 154 opportunities to blitz last year. Actually, let me make sure I have pass plays up, because I might not have. Talk for one more second if you do your thing. I'll pull the number. All right, it was 142 pass opportunities last year, and they rushed five or more on third and five plus 55 times. So 55 divided by 142.
Here we go with the math.
That gives you 38.7%. They blitzed third and five plus with five or more last year, and now we're down to 12.5%.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a huge, huge difference. Obviously.
Now, I think the argument for people, boy, we did not intend this podcast to go this way today, but an argument against that would be to say, well, the Steelers are doing good at getting off on third downs this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I haven't really thought critically about it, but if you just want another number about them not blitzing, then there you
right.
go.
Right. Now, I guess the thing now you could play into that, too, is the Steelers have not gotten themselves into enough third down situations. It's all fine to get off the field 70% of the time on third downs, but How many possessions do you have where you only get one third down? You know, when you...
Yeah, but again, just from a percentage standpoint, it doesn't worry about the amount. It's a stark difference.
Right, right. So I would be quite interested to go back and look at this team on second and six or more. You know, six yards or more, and how many times they're sending five man pressure. And go from there. But we have beat the blitzing thing to death, and we'll see what happens this week. When you look at the Steelers offense versus the Ravens defense, we've already kind of talked about that a little bit more. We kind of expect a short, crisp passing game by the Steelers this week. A lot of get the ball in the hands of Le'Veon Bell however you can. This is a Even though the Ravens are 3-4, this is not a bad defense.
No, it's a great defense, or at least close to it, especially that run defense. It's always tough, and it's as tough as it's ever been. To watch Brandon Williams on tape, I think he's probably maybe the second best, maybe the best nose tackle in the NFL right now, and Timmy Jernigan's doing a great job. He's got four sacks for him. They have a decent rotation going on. So, yeah, that run defense is super tough. You're going to have to be creative with Bell, like the Jets game, to put him in space and get the ball in his hands as a receiver. He could have another 10-catch game this week just because it's going to be so tough to try to run on this Ravens front. So they're going to be an aggressive group. They're going to throw a lot at you in coverage. They're going to play basically everything. They'll blitz. They have their own fire zone, kind of complements their fire X, some of their nickel blitz. So, they're going to create some headaches for you. They do a lot of moving pieces. They bluff blitz. They cover every gap. They play with one down lineman. They go dime. They have a 1-4-6, a 2-3-6. They have their multiple in their base defense. They can play. Jadarius Smith was hand up, hand down, very similar to Rob Ninkovich. So, I mean, it's just there's a laundry list of things that you have to account for with this defense.
Yes, indeed. And Eric Weddle, still one of the smartest safeties in the league. He's going to... You got to know where he's at all times on the field. The Steelers are going to have to bust some explosive plays in this game. I really, really think explosive plays and penalties, I think, are going to play a huge part. Ben, obviously, as you would expect every week, you just can't turn the football over in this game. I'm not expecting a high scoring game. I don't think I don't think a high scoring game favors the Steelers here, but by any stretch of the imagination. All right, anything to add about offense defense here? Previewing this game.
None for offensive defense, but special teams. Watch out, the Ravens have top special teamers in Tucker and Cook and Devin Hester, but also their field goal block unit. They've blocked three field goals this year. Two of them were close to 50-yard field goals, admittedly. One of them was an extra point. They got a lot of size, a lot of length in the interior. Brent Urban is 6'7". He had a block last year. I think he had the block that won against Cleveland. He has a block this year as well. So special teams has to be on point. It's going to probably be their toughest challenge of any game this year. It's going to be these two Ravens games.
Yeah, and the Steelers special teams units haven't been bad this year. Would like to see a field-flipping play or two from the return team, but when you have the way they punt the ball and the way they kick it off, there might not be many opportunities to do that. And we all hope that they're punting more than they're kicking off to the Steelers on Sunday. Anyway, Alex, we open it up as I mentioned to questions on this Friday as well too. I'm gonna roll through a few of them here. Tage Rosendahl writes in, what's up with the pass rush? Any word on Carlos Williams' progress? Carlos Williams, look, I mean, he's a practice squad guy right now. I think they're maybe hoping he could be a guy that can maybe complement Le'Veon Bell, but not this year. And this is assuming he does not get plucked off the Steelers' practice squad from here on out. We'll see what happens with D'Angelo Williams and his knee. If this knee ends up being a long-term issue with D'Angelo Williams, and right now it looks like it is because, he missed the game before prior to the bye. He had the bye. It doesn't sound like he's going to be active. Maybe there's a situation there where Carlos Williams ends up on the 53, but if he's going to end up on the 53, he better be able to help out some on special teams, and he better be a short yardage guy you better be able to count on him in pass protection as well too. So really nothing to report there. I think Alex and I have really hit on the pass rush pretty good this past week as well too there. So Tage, thanks for the comment. BJ Pugh, I know I see his name in my timeline quite a bit. Over under 0.5 sacks against the Ravens this week. I'm going to go over. I'm going to go out on a limb and say they at least get one this week.
Yeah, I'll be optimistic with you. I think they get one.
I think James Harrison will get his first one this week. So I'm not sure if that's considered a bold prediction at this point. Maybe it is, but I think James Harrison gets at least one. I think the Steelers will get at least two sacks in this game. I hope. Ted Webb writes in, a little over and under for you. Bell total yards from scrimmage, 150. He says he'll take the over. Oh, wow. I'll go with Ted. I'll take the over of 150 because I think that's what it's going to take for the Steelers to win this game.
I'm going to take the under just because I think running the football is going to be really tough. I don't think he's going to do that much as a receiver. I think he'll maybe get 8 to 9 catches, but the average won't be high enough, so a little under.
All right. Thanks for the questions, everybody. I got the notice out there a little bit late, so those are some good questions here on this Friday. And being it as it is Friday, we'll go through these games here. Alex hates to pick against the line, so I won't –
I'm just too stupid to. That's stuff that I hate. I can't wrap my mind. I'm not a gambler.
If you saw my picks so far this year, I'm stupid too when it comes to this. I haven't had a good season, I think, in 2 years. And last night, Thursday, I didn't start off the week good. I had Tampa Bay plus 4.5. I figured that maybe finally at home they'd be able to hang with a team, and of course they didn't. So
hello.
I'm 0-1
You've been
right
selected
now
to participate in a short 30-second survey.
I seem to get some audio. You didn't hear that audio, did you? Okay, nope. Good. Let's see here. Let me pull these lines back up here for the games. We'll start things off with Jacksonville at Kansas City. Kansas City is favored by 7 at home. You're probably going to pick Kansas City in this game, right?
Yeah, it's a little less interesting when I don't have to pick the lines. But, although Kansas City does not have Alex Smith and no Spencer Ware, still I think that secondary, which is turnover opportunistic against Blake Bortles, is going to be enough so Kansas City gets the win.
Jacksonville, of course, a few changes here. We'll have to see what happens with them. This team, they need to at least keep this one close for sure. I don't know the status of Hurns. I think he's okay. He had a big game or a decent game, mostly in garbage time against the Titans there. I love these underdogs. I think this could be an upset for Jacksonville. So give me Jacksonville plus the 7 points. Detroit at Minnesota. boy, what's up with the Minnesota offense and Sam Bradford? We all know how good their defense is, but if they have to get into a shootout with Detroit, you really have to like Detroit in this one, even though Minnesota's favored by 6. What do you like to happen?
Yeah, I think Minnesota wins. You're right. If the shootout is going to be a problem, but you know, Mike Zimmer's a great coach. We've talked about so many times this year. Minnesota, oh, they're done. When they lose Teddy Bridgewater, oh, they're done. When they lose Adrian Peterson, oh, they're done. I mean, I know it's bad for them right now, but I think that they're a resilient team. They always work back from adversity. So I'm going to take Minnesota to win here by field goal.
Can Detroit get the ball into the hands of who? Theo Riddick and some of these guys out of the backfield. I think that'll be the biggest part in obviously controlling that pass rush against the Vikings. I think a lot of people are going to be on the down on the Vikings this week, coming off their last two games. I think the people, because of Matthew Stafford on the other side, are going to be encouraged to take those points. I'm not. I think Minnesota's going to cover this one at home. So give me Minnesota minus 6 here. Philadelphia on the road against the Giants. This should be a decent game to watch. The Giants favored at home by 2.5.
I'm going to take the Eagles in this one. I know that, you know, they struggle a little bit offensively, but I love that coaching staff. I think they're going to figure out their mistakes, and I think they get a little healthier along the defense line if they get Benny Logan back, and I think the Giants are pretty one-dimensional right now offensively. So give me the Eagles.
I'll be optimistic with you, and I think the Eagles can pull out a road win here. So give me Carson Wentz and company plus the 2.5 on this one. Dallas at Cleveland. I laugh because at the start of the season, Dallas was the team that everybody – look, I mean, the upcoming game against the Steelers, the opening line or the perceived opening line was like 9 points or something like that. Wow. You know, and you know, they've been easily a solid team with Dak Prescott and, of course, Ezekiel Elliott. Dallas favored by – we're going to go with 7.5 here right now. Looks to be predominant in what it's going to be come kickoff here. So you obviously think Dallas is going to win this on the road.
Yeah, I think they win by at least 10. So I think Dallas has comfortable for all.
Yeah, hard for me to go against you. Look, I know that Cleveland's got Jamie Collins in town now, but it's hard envisioning them shutting down that Dallas running game unless they force Dak Prescott to make a mistake or two. I just don't see how they're able to hang in this game. So give me Dallas to lay the 7.5 points there. The Jets at Miami. I don't know what to do here. Jets favored at home by 3.5. Miami's favorite at home by 3.5. What's going to happen here?
I think that this is, I guess, an upset of the week. You can consider it. I'm going to take the Jets in this one just because their run defense is still so strong, and Ajayi is not going to run the way he has the last two games against Pittsburgh and Buffalo. And I think it's going to put the game in Tannehill. It's not what you want to do. So as bad as the Jets are on offense, I think they get the victory.
Yeah,
on
I'm
going
to go with you. In fact, I think this is most of where I'm going to gamble with your money this week, with your paycheck here. I like the Jets to upset the Dolphins here. So give me the Jets plus the 3.5 points. Pittsburgh at Buffalo. Well, we'll save that one for last. New Orleans at San Francisco. It looks like New Orleans favored on the road here by 4.5 points.
Yeah, what a sad state San Francisco is right now to be down 4 points on at home. But, New Orleans, no explanation really needed.
Yeah, and, boy, the time's ticking. You have to wonder now if Chip Kelly's going to make it through the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to rub that one in David Todd's face when that happens. Chip Kelly's going to end up back at – I don't know where he's going to end up. Who knows? Maybe LSU. Maybe he tries to I don't see him beating New Orleans this week, so –
Yeah, I bet Chip Kelly goes to Houston and they run that air raid offense down there.
There you go. Point to
Houston as in the college team, not the Texans, by the way, just to be clear.
Give me New Orleans to cover on the road here. Carolina at Los Angeles. Boy, two teams that you really just don't know what their identity is at this point. Carolina favored by 3 on the road. I think Carolina is a better team, especially defensively, than the way they played in some of these games. But, the record is what it is, Cam Newton's going to probably be running for his life a little bit in this game as well, too. Panthers favored by 3 on the road. What you like?
I'm going to get the Panthers by a touchdown just because the Ravens' passing attack isn't good enough to exploit the Panthers' weakest part, which is their
secondary. Yeah, I like Carolina on the road as well, too. Three, boy, that's that right at that number where you're just not sure what to do with. I'll take Carolina to cover on the road. Indianapolis at Green Bay. Boy, Indianapolis, just a beat-up team. T.Y. Mm-hmm. Hilton, I think, is going to end up probable for this game. Coming off an injury, their offensive line is a mess. They might get Dwayne Allen back this week as well, too. But is that going to be enough? The Green Bay Packers have had some issues defensively, health-wise. I'm not sure they're going to get some guys back. But when all said and done, Green Bay is right now favored by, let's go with, 7.5 here.
I think Green Bay wins by like 6 or something, so maybe the Colts cover, but Green Bay is going to get the victory.
So hard to play in Green Bay, and mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers is playing, some of his better football right now, I think. And it'll be interesting to see if Cobb plays in this game. Rodgers might have to throw another 50 times in this one due to the running back situation there in Green Bay. Everybody's going to be on Green Bay to cover this. I know it. I just know it. Sometimes I like to mm-hmm. outthink myself, and I'm going to try to outthink myself this time. I'll take Indianapolis plus the 7.5 here. I don't think they win, but I think they keep this close. Uh-huh. Tennessee at San Diego. San Diego favored at home by 5.
Yeah, I went back and forth on this one a lot. I'm going to go Tennessee, though. I think their running attack, even with DeMarco Murray a little banged up, is going to be really successful. The Chargers' run defense is hurting without Jatavis Brown, without Manti Te'o. So I'm going to go Tennessee on this
one. All right, I'll go with you. You convinced me. Having that 5 points right there, just a lot of uncertainty with that one. I'll think Tennessee can at least keep this game close enough. So give me the 5 points on the road here. Denver at Oakland. This started off as a pick'em game. People still don't know what to do with it. Oakland favored by 1 at home. The question is can they stop? Can the Oakland offensive line keep Denver away from the quarterback? And Carr's played great so far this season. I'm not convinced Oakland be able to run the football. We'll see what happens with, isn't Tlaib kind of banged up for this one as well? Who do you like in this one?
I like Oakland just because I love what Derek Carr is doing. If you're not sure to take, I usually take the better quarterback, and Derek Carr is miles above Trevor Siemian right now.
And Oakland's defense hasn't been all that good, even with Mack and all, right? I mean, they have struggled defensively. It's hard to pick against that defense, man. And sometimes when I'm up against, I really like to look at the two defenses here. I think they're going to harass Carr in this one enough, force a turnover too. So give me, even though it's a 1 point, give me Denver to beat Oakland on the road. Buffalo at Seattle. Seattle, as you would imagine, favored at home by 7 points. What you got?
Yeah, I think Seattle wins pretty convincingly in this one, even without Michael Bennett. I think they win by 14.
I like Seattle to cover this one at home as well, too. No deep analysis on this one. We'll close it out with Pittsburgh at Baltimore. This thing opened up at 2.5 points, Ravens favored. It's really off the board on a lot of places still because of Ben Roethlisberger's status. I figured this one's still going to come in at 2.5 with Baltimore favored. What do you like? Give me a final score prediction.
It's going to be – it's always a tough game. It's always close. These things can go either way. But, Dave, this is probably going to draw a lot of anger. I'm going to take Baltimore because Ben's history coming back, and that Ravens defense as tough as it is, and the Steelers defense not providing the splash plays that they need to. They're at historically low levels in sacks and turnovers. I like Baltimore. I think they're a more physical team right now. I think they're playing better ball. I mean, I don't know if they're on a 4-game losing streak, but in some regards, I think they're playing a lot better ball, especially just kind of being sound against the run and things like that. So – it hurts me to say, but give me Baltimore to win. I'll say the score, 20 to 14.
Okay. I think the Steelers can keep them to under 20 points in this one. And look, I mean, Ravens offense hasn't been great this year, but the Steelers defense, of course, hasn't been great either. The way the Steelers defense plays in this game, I think, is going to be the biggest thing. They obviously, I don't think, can get in the shootout in this one, especially with Roethlisberger and the way he's played in the past. I'm going to go a little bit of surprise here because I think the betting public, a lot of it's going to look at the shape of Roethlisberger, look at the history with how he's played coming off of injury. I don't think Roethlisberger is going to, if he plays, I don't think he's going to play great in this game, but I think he can play just good enough. And I think maybe if the Steelers defense can get a sack or two, shut down this run, not give up the big play. I'm not asking for a lot, right? I can see this being one of those Ravens-Steelers one-point games. So I'll give it to the Steelers in overtime, 17-16. And we'll see. The Steelers could put a foot on the AFC North if they win this one on the road. We'll wrap things up with this. The mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger. Let Craig Oxane guide you through the sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Baltimore. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Oxane, a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve your dream of home ownership. Call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399. Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Alex, I appreciate you sitting in for David Todd this week. Great to have you back on again. And this obviously won't be the last time that you're back on as well, too. Folks, have a great Friday. We'll all be back, me and David, probably on Monday to recap this thing. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, and today, Alex Kozora.